Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition on the book of Proverbs. We are currently in Proverbs chapter 12. We'll pick up today with verse 7, where Solomon writes, "The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand." To amplify on the sage's words, iniquity and instability, the wise should know, go hand in hand. You know, at first, Machiavellian principles may and often do appear to succeed in gaining their ends under the sun, that is, in this temporal world. But in the final analysis, what sowed their britches tends to split their britches. The house of the righteous is made of more durable stuff. The idea here is that everything about righteousness defies what we know as the second law of thermodynamics. Righteousness tends to produce order and stability because it is agreeable to God's moral government. Verse 8, "A man will be praised," says Solomon, "according to his insight, but one of perverse mind will be despised." Again, a generalization. Sound thinking, which includes, we must understand, good moral sense, and includes acknowledgment of the will and ways of God, evokes the admiration and praise of all grounded people, whereas persons with warped minds, a la Howard Stern, a Hugh Hefner type, the ACLU types in general, they will earn the contempt of all good and noble and high-minded people. Says Solomon in verse 9, "Better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than the person who honors himself and lacks bread." We should tell you that the Hebrew text here is ambiguous and can be translated also, as do the RSV and the Greek version of the Old Testament. "Better is a man of humble social standing," it means, "who works for or serves himself than one who plays a great man but lacks bread." The NIV translation catches the spirit of this ambiguous Hebrew text. Better to be a nobody and have a servant than pretend to be somebody and have no food. This reminds us about a lesson in life. Some people are all for show. They may look good, but accomplish nothing. But wisdom says better off is the humble fellow who makes do than a social wannabe who does no good. Better is the hard-working man who puts on overalls and brings home an honest wage than a genteel pretender who puts on airs and is suffocating in debt. Putting up a front doesn't count for much in this life, and certainly doesn't count for anything hereafter. Verse 10 of Proverbs 12 says this, "A righteous man has regard for the life of his beast, but the compassion of the wicked is cruel." A righteous man, reflecting the moral character of God, is kind and considerate of all of God's creatures. His compassion and care extending, like God's, to the weak and the helpless, and right down to his lowly animals. The wicked, meaning those estranged from God, ignorant of God's character, and heedless of God's law, are so confused that even their attempts at compassion often turn out to be cruel. Let me amplify on that a bit. For example, the welfare state. We appear, perhaps, as a nation, to be rolling back into that and maybe to be headed in a direction of socialism. Capitalism is far from perfect and is too enmeshed with greed, but it's a better system than socialism, which has never worked for the social good anywhere. But the welfare state, ignoring biblical wisdom, actually enables indolence and dependence upon others. The welfare state robs people of their dignity. It fosters irresponsibility, and it erodes character. Now, you're listening to a man who, in his youth, grew up in West Virginia. And if anybody has seen the welfare state up close and personal, I have. And I've seen what it does to people, and it's not good. I don't mean everybody back there was on welfare, but I mean that in that state and some others like it, the welfare state got entrenched and really encroached, and it promoted no social good. Another example of verse 10, where it says a righteous man has regard for the life of his beast, his lowly beast, cares for all God's creatures, but the compassion of the wicked, even when the wicked think they're exercising compassion, their minds are so darkened and they're so distorted that oftentimes they're cruel. I mentioned the welfare state. Secular humanistic psychology, with its victimization approach to human problems, actually makes people worse. In dealing with criminal conduct, they are more compassionate toward the evildoers than toward their victims. They aggravate the pain of victims as they pamper those who commit crimes. And they even attempt to extenuate the guilt of the victimizers by blaming society or, God forbid, brain chemistry or whatever for their violent acts. In their misguided compassion, they have greater feelings for animals than for human beings, PETA being a notable example. More concern for mute trees, spotted owls, and salamanders than poor people rendered jobless by their extreme environmentalism. Their compassion is cruel and it's misdirected. In short, the compassion of the wicked, the godless, is directed typically at the wrong objects at the expense of the right objects, and or it actually makes misery more miserable rather than providing any real relief. It's because they're blind. It's because they're alienated from God. It's because they don't care. They don't know, and they don't care for the will and the character of God and conforming to it. In short, the wicked are so wrong-headed that by instinct, they tend to do exactly the wrong things when they want to show a better face, much like a layman coming upon the scene of an accident trying to be a hero, imprudently yanks a car crash victim from behind the wheel, perhaps exacerbating their pains and permanentizing their injuries. Proverbs 12:11 says, "He who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues vain things lacks sense." Solomon is telling us here, in other words, people who conscientiously tend to the serious business of life normally are successful in putting ample food on the table and taking care of their needs. However, those who follow frivolous pursuits, being addicted to having fun and a good time, they typically lack judgment, which more often than not causes them to lack means as well. What we need to know, what the wise need to know, and we'll figure out early on, if they've got ears on, is that life is not a playground. Somehow many American young people don't know that. A healthy society neither regards nor rewards those who would rather surf than sweat. There is wisdom. Today, this problem is exacerbated in our society. Many authorities have said that the age of adolescence today extends all the way down to 32 or 33. There's a book out that I have read, and I'd recommend it to anybody. It's not a Christian book, but it's very, very insightful, by Diana Lewis, I believe it is. It's entitled The Death of the Grown-Up. And that's what we've got in this country. You've got adults wanting to be teenagers, and teenagers never wanting to be grown-ups. And so we've just got a tremendous stall factor where people are just trying to hang on and hang on to their youth with all of its idiosyncrasies. That's not where we want to be. Verse 12 is another verse where the Hebrew is ambiguous. The wicked desires the booty of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. There are many different interpretations, but the point seems to be this. The wicked connive to gain income by evil devices. Anybody who's in that mode, you put a circle around them, and they can be encompassed in that category that you call the wicked. But the lifestyle of the righteous is inherently productive. The righteous does not have to scheme, but he flourishes naturally. Solomon says in verse 13, an evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips. This theme in various ways runs all through Proverbs and is repeated for the reasons that we have explained again and again, because it is so very important. Repetition is a big part of impression and indentation in the mind. An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble. Again, a generalization. A godless tongue will set a trap for itself somewhere along the line. It'll dig a hole for itself, and it'll eventually fall into it. But the lips of the godly avoid the snares that trip up the godless. Now that, again, is not absolute. The righteous are never perfect in the use of their tongue. But this is the tendency. This is the way things generally work in God's moral order. And righteous men are prudent. Righteous men are wise. Righteous men think before they speak. They learn proper restraint. That is their norm. And because of that, they avoid many of the snares that trip up the wicked. Lies, deceptions, half-truths. Well, they just always require more of the same to cover one's tracks. And we all know that eventually they entangle a person, and then, yes, one must pay the piper. But the speech of the righteous tends to be without regret. That's because it's free of deception, and it's free of malice, and generally, it is thoughtful and premeditated. If we claim to be wise, hope to be wise, we've got to learn to control that tongue and direct it in godly channels. Again and again, Proverbs tells us that. Verse 14 says, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words. The deeds of a man's hands will return to him. This proverb teaches that word habits, as much as work habits, have their return. So one should seek to excel in prudent speech as much as in diligent labor, for both produce income in their own way. Never forget verse 14. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. This is another of the marks that separates the fool from the sage. A fool is always an incurable know-it-all. Find one of those types. We've seen them. We've seen them in the workplace. We've seen them in school. We've seen them in athletics. We've seen them in the street. We've seen them all too much. The kind of person who knows it all. He's never wrong, and he's never in doubt. He's impervious to counsel and correction. He is the exemplar of the Frank Sinatra, I did it my way, school of thought. The wise, however, are never adverse to better wisdom. It doesn't mean that they take and run with whatever you tell them. Oh, no. But they're always open to better wisdom. They will always weigh the advice of other people. In the end, they may not accept it, but they will listen to it, and they will weigh it. In the end, they may do it their way, but not without careful consideration of other points of view. Verse 16 says, a fool's vexation, another mark of a fool, it's known at once. But the prudent man conceals dishonor, embarrassment. A fool bears this mark. You can count on him not to hold his tongue and suffer in discreet silence when he's shamed. Rather, he is quick to broadcast his vexation to all within range of his voice. The wise, on the other hand, does not advertise the dishonors he may suffer. That restraint exhibits his self-control and strength of character. He is prudent enough not to further complicate his dishonor by stirring the mud and making his detractors look good by a classless reaction. If he goes down, he goes down with class. Solomon counsels in verse 17, "He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witness, deceit." This proverb is talking about a character trait, one who is known for telling the truth, even when it hurts, can be relied upon better than a lie detector. If you have a person who has that reputation, I'm saying, you can count on them to tell the truth better than a lie detector to tell you who's telling the truth. That kind of person will give the straight skinny, because integrity in such matters is ingrained in his character. But if one is known to have been a false witness previously, take it to the bank. That witness cannot be relied upon to be a truthful witness now. He might be telling the truth, but you can't rely on it. If he's lied before, he'll lie again. A liar may tell the truth in court then, but don't bet your bank account on it, because he has a record of deceit. Lie once, you'll lie twice. Lie twice, you'll lie three times. So don't think liars turn their lying on and off like a faucet. Don't think liars are respecters of persons when the truth is at stake. If they cared for the truth, they wouldn't have their reputation for being fast and loose with it. Verse 18 tells us, "There is one who speaks rashly, like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." Here's the counsel. A wise, thoughtless tongue has this tendency to pierce like a sword. It wounds like a knife. It injures not only at the end of the sword, but it comes back to haunt the verbally reckless themselves. Nobody is well served, in other words, by a rash tongue that spills out words like a Gatling gun. On the other hand, the speech habits of the wise have this tendency to bring healing, at least where there are ears to hear. That is not to say that the wise are never critical. Don't misunderstand me. But it is to say that the wise are thoughtful. They are always constructive in intent, and they're always measured to their purpose, like a physician's prescriptions. Chapter 12, verse 19 says, "Truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment." What we learn here is that lies may win battles, but in the end, truth wins the war. Truth has a way of coming out, and folks' lies eventually get exposed. Speak the truth and your time will come, but be prepared for lies like fickle fashions to have their moment. They will. You've heard that saying, every dog has its day, and so do lies. But the truth endures forever, although today it may temporarily be obscured by deceit. Now that is so good for us to remember. Otherwise, we might get impatient and fight fire with fire and try to take our own vengeance by the same godless weapons. Verse 20 says, "Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy." Kidner encapsulates the thought nicely. The plans you shape, shape you. If one devises evil schemes, you know what? The process deforms one's character. Acts of deceit become a mark of deceit. But deceitfulness shortly becomes reflexive. It is a phenomenon at work when people call someone a good liar. When lying becomes a habit, it soon becomes a nature, a second nature, if you please. It does not turn on and off at will. And if that happens to those who plot evil, those whose habit is to promote peace rather than pain, not only experience joy in the process, but joy becomes a defining attribute of their spirit. They do good, and they feel good about what they do. "No harm befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble," verse 21. This proverb in chapter 12 is a class example of generalization. We've talked about it. Obviously, in this temporal world, bad things, as we reckon them on this temporal plane, do happen to the righteous. Like our Lord, His disciples are persecuted and reviled, sometimes imprisoned and maimed and murdered innocently. But Solomon's point is that righteous men do not behave in ways that injure the innocent or invite retaliation for injustice in a healthy society from noble men. The ways of the righteous make for smooth sailing, but the ways of the wicked beg for trouble, and eventually they find it. Verse 22 says, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are His delight." Most people have the good sense to figure out who is in charge and on which side their bread is buttered. Only a fool would mess around with habits that bring down the heavy boot of outraged authority. No harm befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. The wise will make every effort to please legitimate authority within the boundaries of God's will. So this proverb reminds us here in verse 22 that the Lord abominates a liar and a deceiver. We have had that warning redundantly through Proverbs so far, and will again. We've had it deliberately with the hope that it sticks to the walls of our memory, and we will not let that habit take root, or if it has, repent of it. God delights in those who deal faithfully, which ought to be all the incentive we need, for it is both right to please God for no other reason than that, but also because it does please God, it is profitable for us. Verse 23 says, "A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of the fool proclaims folly." This is another contrast between the foolish and the wise, so that we may practice self-evaluation and determine which path we are on, so that we may size up the character of others by their signs. The wise feel no compulsion to tell the world all they know. They know what should be told and what is better left unsaid. The wise, in other words, are discreet. They do not feel a need to show off their knowledge or show up others by their knowledge. The fool, on the other hand, broadcasts folly, and he is the last to know his torrent of talk carries nothing of value. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the slack of hand will be put to forced labor. Well, you've heard it said in criminal investigations involving greed, follow the money. One might also say, follow the sweat, and you will generally find the power. The exceptions prove the rule. Hard work is the fuel that powers people to the top, generally speaking. If you're ambitious in life and want to be a top dog rather than a poor slob, well, wisdom says learn to work and work hard. Many a brilliant mind is on the sideline because of a slack hand. Follow the sweat, it'll take you to the penthouse. Follow the sloth, and it'll take you to the outhouse. Verse 25 says, "Anxiety in the heart of a man weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad." Worry and anxiety is a weight on the human spirit. That's what it's saying in this world of troubles. It does no one any good to create in others more anxiety than is necessary, and sometimes it is necessary to get people to amend dangerous ways. Never underestimate, however, the uplifting power of a few good words. The lesson here is a piece of useful human psychology and social relationships. It helps us understand the emotional state of people. It's hard to be all smiley-faced when one is wearing the burdens of the world, and we wouldn't expect it. On the other hand, we might be able to ameliorate that heaviness with a few uplifting words. We'll pick up right there at the end of verse 12 next time. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.